ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to Media Land, your limited edition look at what's happening behind the scenes and on your screens. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Vivian Kelly.
And this is our last show for the year and, well, our last show, as the good ship Media Land has not been recommissioned for 2026. We talked about radio's killing season a few weeks ago and we are big believers in living the brand.
But we're going out with a bang, looking at the big stories of the year and what they tell us about the media we'll all be consuming next year.
So without further ado,
so if there's one word that could sum up the year for Australian media, Tim, I guess it could be consolidation.
I'd like three words, Viv. Media merger mania. It's just been such a year of deal-making here in Australia and around the world too.
Yeah, each year that there's consolidation or media merger mania, as you've termed it, it feels like surely there's nothing left. A bit like media job cuts. How much more consolidation can there be? How fewer companies and people can there be? I remember years ago, last decade actually, when Fairfax and Nine came together and there were all these job cuts and consolidation, and we thought, well, that's got to be it. There's nothing left. And yet here we are in 2025, staring down the barrel of 2026. And apparently there is still fat to cut.
There is, and so much happening even right up to this week. You know, the big conversation that's been going on even since the last show is Warner Brothers Discovery, which we've seen Netflix announced as the winner, and then Paramount saying too slow or too fast. Maybe we yet have something to say. So they've come in with a hostile bid. So it's a bit kind of, it's almost hard to overstate how big Warner Brothers Discovery is around the world.
Yeah, and that will have implications here as well, because so many of the shows that we stream or movies that we see if we go to the cinema, if people still go to the cinema, are made by Warner Brothers and its associated companies. So a deal of this scale has implications for production, as in making films and television, for distribution in terms of where they end up. I know there's fears that if Netflix, which is a streamer at the moment, ends up owning Warner Brothers, the Netflix CEO has previously said he doesn't believe the cinema distribution model is worthwhile. Now, he's now trying to roll that back as there are fears in Hollywood and in the wider entertainment ecosystem that, hang on, is Netflix going to kill off the big cinema release? So he's now trying to say, no, no, it's okay. But just that intersection of every single part of the ecosystem coming together, surely it means fewer things will be made.
Look, and that, and one of those things about Netflix is they do change their minds. You know, let's remember, they started it off as a mail-order DVD company. Then they got into streaming, and then they got into creating their own streaming content. And then they said, you know, we said that we don't do live sport. Actually, we are going to do live sport. And then they said, you know, we said we don't do advertising. Then they decided to do advertising. So it is perfectly possible for them to really reinvent themselves as a fully old media company that does, you know, cinema screenings as well. And by the way, and they do, you know, I last weekend I went to see the latest Knives Out movie, which is a Netflix movie, and I saw that at the cinema. But they do have limited releases. But we're not guaranteed it's Netflix. It could be Paramount, but that's a story which is now going to stretch well into next year.
Well, the cynical version of me believes that maybe they just do cinema release because at the moment, to win big awards, you still do need a theatrical release date. Closer to home, though, we also have some domestic media mergers on the horizon. So Seven West Media, which owns the likes of the West Australian paper in WA and the Seven Network, could be coming together sooner than we think, maybe, with Southern Cross Austereo, which owns the likes of Triple M and Today FM and various radio assets.
Yeah, you're correct. We're in the final stages of that. So the Seven West Media shareholders, they get a say in the next few days this side of Christmas. And my understanding is that they will then come together as one company very fast. I'm hearing January the 7th as the date that will actually happen. So staff will come back from their Christmas holidays to a new boss.
I think the thing that's most interesting about this is that last decade when we were going through all the mergers and consolidation here, it did feel like everyone was trying to become one thing. So ARN, which owns KIIS and Gold Networks, they had all sorts of things. They had outdoor advertising, they had radio, they had a creative agency, and they wanted to be all about audio. And that's what Australia's media companies were doing last decade. This decade, it seems like they all want to merge and become giant entertainment companies once more with a huge offering, which also seems to be what Warner Brothers and Netflix might be doing globally.
It is. Yeah, there are, do you know, actually maybe kind of one thing to think about is some are moving in that direction. Others are simplifying things, you know, because the other big deal we're waiting on, and I understand that there's imminent progress, is simplification. So Nine, for instance, getting out of radio by the looks of it, running the sale process for Nine Radio. My understanding is that as we record this on Friday morning, today was the deadline day for potential buyers to get their bids in. So keep an eye on this space for that one too. It's also been a year of holding the media to account, or not actually always doing that, depending who you ask.
Undoubtedly, one of the biggest media stories of the year was journalist and broadcaster Antoinette Latouf winning her case against the ABC for unlawful termination. She spoke outside the courthouse after the finding.
In December 2023, I shared a Human Rights Watch post because Human Rights Watch found that Israel was using starvation as a weapon of war in Gaza. It is now June 2025, and Palestinian children are still being starved. We see their images every day, emaciated, skeletal, scavenging through the rubble for scraps. This unspeakable suffering is not accidental, it is engineered. Deliberately starving and killing children is a war crime. Today, the court has found that punishing someone for sharing facts about these war crimes is also illegal.
It was a case that became a public relations disaster for the ABC for something that was, at the time, a five-day contract for Antoinette Latouf all the way back in 2023. We're now at the end of 2025 and it's still having implications for everything from how ABC employees talk about what's happening in Israel and Gaza, what they can and can't say on social media, plus the commentary on the taxpayer cost on this case that ultimately the ABC definitively lost.
Yeah, and something we learned during that whole court hearing, which was relatively unusually live video streamed, so it had thousands of viewers, were how decisions were made within the ABC as well. And a number of executives, both current and former, came away with, you know, with reputations weakened from where they went in. You know, in particular, it was something of a kind of cloud around the final kind of weeks and months of David Anderson as managing director, of Ita Buttrose as chair, and the roles they had played in the decision making behind the scenes. You know, it came away with it was another really bad chapter for the ABC.
One thing that was said a lot in terms of the ABC's decision making was that perhaps they just should have never let this get to court, where we got to see all of those internal emails and the internal panic that seemed to ensue when it became clear that pro-Israel lobbyists were pestering the ABC about Antoinette's employment. Apparently, Antoinette just wanted to be reinstated and to have an apology for how she was treated. In the end, she was awarded $70,000 for the distress that the whole debacle caused her. The ABC also had additional penalties. And people really lost trust in the ABC in terms of thinking about how much lobbyists are influencing what people are doing and how much that's being passed down from senior management to people on air and behind the scenes. So current managing director Hugh Marks has had quite a lot of cleaning up to do, even though it wasn't his decision-making that led to this. He's now the public face of it and the one who really has to fix it to reinstate that trust, both in viewers, listeners, and the people who still work at the ABC.
Not, of course, that the rest of the media can claim credit when it comes to court hearings. It was also the year of the so-called mushroom murder trial, Erin Patterson, and there was plenty of poor/illegal reporting of that case.
That was another case that had the media just absolutely hooked, and it also had audiences hooked, which put the media in an interesting position where they wanted to feed that appetite, but they had to be careful about what they said because the trial was still ongoing. There had not been a conviction yet. And yet people like Kyle Sanderlands, who is a radio broadcaster, mainly in Sydney, but being rolled out across the country, saying things about her alleged guilt when that guilt was not yet proven or decided by a jury, and this sort of fever which overtook the media in trying to cover this from every single possible angle led to all sorts of breaches, including her children being named when they weren't supposed to be named, people making jokes about her guilt when that hadn't been decided. Things were, in the end, referred to potential criminal charges for contempt of court, but that sort of seems to have fizzled out now that the spotlight on the case has gone away.
And it's absolutely something which isn't yet solved, Viv. Every time we see some sort of court case, we see social media sharing information that a judge has said should not be shared.
This week, Gaza was named by Reporters Without Borders as the deadliest place in the world to work as a journalist, with more than 253 journalists killed since the 7th of October in 2023.
Australian media wrestled with how to cover Gaza and the journalists who have been killed covering it.
We spoke to the executive director for the Alliance for Journalists' Freedom, Peter Gresty, in August.
It's not so much about the journalists themselves, it's about the flow of information that we all need to be able to understand what is taking place in Gaza, to be able to have well-informed public debates that ultimately inform government policy. By targeting the journalists, what's happening is that the Israelis are silencing access to information. They're controlling the flow of information. And I think that's what makes this particularly egregious. I know there's a temptation to focus on the individual people themselves. And as you say, that was indicating that it's no, there's no, or journalists aren't deserving of any more particular protection than anyone else in Gaza. But it is about the information flows that we need to be focusing on. The problem, of course, is that journalists outside of Gaza don't have access. The Israelis have repeatedly refused to let foreign correspondents into Gaza. They've accused all of the Palestinian journalists of being associated with Hamas, either directly or of swallowing Hamas propaganda. And so if that's the way that they're going to regard the work of Palestinians, then it's incumbent on them to let outsiders in to see what's going on, to report independently. At the moment, that's just not happening. So all of the checking that we can do has to be through third-party sources, and that's very, very difficult.
Is it unusual, the lack of access that foreign correspondents have at the moment?
It is very, very difficult. Governments often try to shut journalists out of combat zones, but in most conflicts of the past, journalists have been able to sneak in. There are almost always routes in and out of conflict zones. Gaza is unusual because access is so tightly controlled by the Israeli authorities. You cannot get in or out without passing through zones of territory that are under very strict Israeli control. So it is extremely difficult.
So one thing that's been a huge criticism that's been levied at the Australian media has been how they cover this with active versus passive language. And that's something we spoke to Peter about earlier in the year, when some outlets choose to say that journalists have died or there have been a number of deaths, as if it's just this incidental thing that's happened, rather than them actively being killed and targeted in a war zone.
As in suggesting they had been killed with a bomb dropped by the IDF, for instance, that sort of language.
Yeah, well, there's just been a lot of headlines where, you know, it talks about journalists dying or it being dangerous to be a journalist in places including Myanmar, Russia and Gaza, where journalists are actively being targeted to silence them from reporting on what's happening. So it's not accidental that 253 journalists have been killed. Even newspapers within Israel are running headlines now that say Media Freedom Group says Israel killed highest number of journalists again this year. So even pro-Israel publications are starting to be more active in their language about how these journalists are dying, why these journalists are dying, and who's killing them. And I think this report just really highlights that 2025 in particular was a really bleak year for people in these regions trying to tell the world what's happening.
And that, of course, are the places where there are or were at least some journalists on the ground. There are other parts of the world, Sudan, the Yemen, where there are things happening which we just do not know about because there aren't journalists there. Viv, it was also a year of the Australian government finally walking some of their talk when it came to dealing with the big media platforms.
Yeah, just this week we've had the rollout of the social media ban or social media delay, depending on whose propaganda you choose
to buy into.
Did
you see all those kids out playing on the streets, Viv?
Yeah, they're all back playing sport. Their mental health is fine.
And building tree houses.
Everything is great. We had that rollout. They've also been more things about trying to get the social media giants to pay for content. Plus, there's talk about content quotas for streamers. Why do you think in 2025 the Australian government decided to take on these tech giants when these things have been brewing for far more than a decade?
I mean, they have, and a couple of the examples you use have certainly almost been on hold for a couple of years. The answer, of which I'm sure is always the answer, is at least in part politics. Now, some of it when it came to battles with the platforms is an awful lot of them are US headquartered. So there's the relationship with the Trump government to think about. The news bargaining incentive, which that was the one that dropped right at the end of the year and is currently in a consultation period with the industry and the platforms, will effectively create a new, call it a levy, call it a tax, call it whatever you want, but on the platforms where they'll be able to reduce the cost of that tax if they do deals with local media companies. So it's a new mechanism for funding media that sort of moves on from that news media bargaining code of a couple of years ago, or 4 years ago, which you might remember very, very temporarily led to Facebook blocking Australia for a while, cutting us off very briefly from the world of Facebook. So that one is going to be a theme for early in 2026 as well. But as you say, the content quotas we moved on to.
I guess the other really interesting factor with these is the power of individuals. We spoke to Cam Wilson, the associate editor of Crikey, on last week's episode of Medialand, and one of his focuses throughout the year of reporting on the social media delay has been the influence of Michael Whipper Whipfley, who is a Nova Sydney breakfast presenter at the moment. And since we spoke to Cam, he's done even more reporting where it's almost become comical how the social media ban came about. Whipper was frustrated with his teenager being on social media, had a meeting and a chat with a friend, and a few minutes later was on the phone to former New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet saying, how do we change the law and get this banned? Now, that sounds like the kind of...
We're a proper company. We're a proper country, Viv.
That sounds like the kind of inflamed conversation you might have at the pub and then talk about how you're going to change the world. But this individual, not only called former New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet, was able to wield the influence and have meetings with the Prime Minister and all sorts of people, build this campaign with the support of some sponsors and traditional media companies. And now, even if you believe that the social media delay is good for the children and for the overall mental health of this country, it did start with a media personality being annoyed at their child.
They did, and they had Anthony Albanese on their show something like 11 times over the last year. Do you think it also helps when the owner of your radio station is called Lachlan Murdoch?
Look, that's obviously one cynical take on it all, that a lot of people will be maybe perhaps driven back to television or back to radio. And one criticism that has been levied at these laws, and it's certainly not, I didn't think of this take, it's all over social media, believe it or not, is that we've restricted children in terms of what they can do on their phones and on social media. They can still flock to the television and be absolutely bombarded with relentless gambling adverts. So there is a discussion about whether or not that's healthy, that's safe, that's for the good of the community. But, you know, we've taken one step, and of course now it's had all these flow-on effects where people are looking at all sorts of other potentially problematic features of the media.
And if you'd asked me at the start of the year, I'd have definitely predicted that betting ads would be legislated, and they were not.
Maybe next year, Tim. The year started with news about radio shows, and it kind of hasn't stopped.
It hasn't, Viv. And here to help us chew over some of the implications of the year for the radio industry is Medialand's producer. Now, having one Kelly on the show with Vivian Kelly is not enough. Welcome, Rob Kelly.
Kia ora, nice to be here.
And Rob, one of the things that fascinates me is you came to Australia relatively recently. You worked in the radio industry in New Zealand. How did you find arriving and hearing about this troublesome duo called Kyle and Jackie O?
People kept saying Kyle and Jackie O to me like I had a cultural understanding of what they were, and I thought it might be a building or a business. And I had to work out that it was two people who had a radio show. So I do understand that for a lot of people, the stories this year about Kyle and Jackie O, the failing potential move to Melbourne, the lack of a national rollout, all of those things that happened, kind of didn't mean anything to me. So I had to learn that on the job. And it's interesting, I worked in the New Zealand radio industry and in the Irish radio and TV industry more recently. And it's interesting how every market thinks that it's the only way a market can operate. So there's this assumption in Australia that this is what commercial radio is. And I found that really interesting. And I wonder if it's maybe not as strong as it once was, as Nova and other smooth listening options start to chip away at that industry. I don't know. Do you feel that there's a change happening in the Australian radio industry?
Well, we've seen so many job losses this year, Rob, that it would be hard to argue that things are as strong as they once were. And part of what has been blamed for these job losses, at ARN at least, is this hugely expensive deal that Kyle and Jackie O signed with ARN. And then they didn't bring in the advertising dollars, based partly on the contraction of the economy here and the media market, but also based on some of the content that Kyle and Jackie O were putting to air. In that discussion around how controversial their content was, Rob, globally, do you think it is that controversial? What's your read on Kyle and Jackie O compared to other shock jocks around the world?
I think Australia goes in for a particular kind of shock jockery that isn't in other markets. In New Zealand, I think it would be a shocking. It's kind of any of the various things that we covered this year would have been, I mean, there was front page news here, but it would have been would have had a huge impact in the New Zealand market. And in the Irish market, maybe less so, but still there would have been, there's less tolerance for that kind of thing in other markets. I wonder if Australia has quite a thick skin, particularly from its state-based radios throughout the 70s, 80s and 90s. I think there's a heritage of quite forthright radio, to put it in a nice setting, that isn't maybe in other markets, and that tolerance for it is baked into why there's been so little kind of regulation of it.
Although, speaking of shock jocks, Australia rejected, I guess, the most famous New Zealand shock jock in that Paul Henry, when he came to do breakfast on Network 10, did not rate. Yet I believe he's still attractive to audiences in New Zealand.
He is now a senior figure. He is on the TVNZ board. So one person's shock jock is another person's board member.
And it's interesting that you are joining us now, Rob, turning us into what could be dubbed a three-hander.
I know.
With Timo, Robbo and Viv on ABC Radio Vivo. National. But do you think that the three-hander is dead in radio? Because we have seen a number of people depart, and I wonder if, as the dust settles on what shows will roll out or last next year, whether they will go back to just two people simply because it's cheaper.
Two or one. I mean, one of the things we've seen this year is the removal of panels down to one host. That's often talked about as being trying to create the connection between one host and an audience, and I think there is merit in that. But it can't be argued, and Mitch Turi talked about this on the show with us earlier in the year when we were talking about the Killing Season. If you have to pay three people, you really need to be bringing in the ad revenue to justify that. And if you aren't, then that would, when you're looking at your budget lines, would be an obvious way of reducing cost. The other side of that, though, is that the three-hander is kind of baked in many markets, and that people like that diversity. They feel like they're with their friends. So I don't think the three-hander is dead, but I do wonder if it's more expensive than people are willing to pay.
And perhaps the other kind of trend which pushes us towards kind of cost savings is this move towards national shows, which is still quite a new experiment in Australia. Obviously, we've talked about ARN Media's hope to do that on KISS with Kyle and Jackie O, but they've also fully pulled the trigger on taking Christian O'Connell national on the Gold Network. So that will be, for the first time, a commercial FM radio show going out nationally in every major metro market next year. So that's going to be a real change for Australian radio.
And that's interesting as well, because while we talk about radio being in trouble, the audiences are still there.
Well, that's about us. Thank you so much for joining us over the year as we've explored a world that can at times be seriously opaque. Thank you for all the feedback and the messages. We've enjoyed reading them all. We've had a blast.
A huge thank you to the technical operators who have recorded and mixed us over the year as we've travelled around the country at sometimes bewildering speed. Our wonderful operators over the year have been Antonia Gauci, Craig Tillmouth, Ellis Fitzpatrick, Hamish Camilleri, Harvey O'Sullivan, Elise Simons, Kerry Dell, Matthew Sigley, Riley Millis and Ross Richardson.
Thank you all, and a big bouquet as well to Dani Saeed from Crikey, Zoe Samios from the Australian Financial Review and Amanda Mead from The Guardian for all stepping up at various points when Viv was off diving for guest host duties.
Cheers to our producer, Rob Kelly, and thanks to you for listening. We've loved making Medialand for you. See you, Tim.
Toodle pip, Viv.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.